You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Happy Thanksgiving Eve. Is that a thing? Thanksgiving Eve? Mike Lefko, Michael Bumpus in for Mike Salk, alongside, of course, Justin Barnes and Maura Dooley.
How are you doing
this morning?
What up, man? I'm doing well. Hanging out. Happy Thanksgiving Eve to Mike, and Mike filling in for Mike.
Is that a thing? Yeah, Thanksgiving Eve.
How many mics we were going to
Yeah, so that's a good point that Maura just brought up. I don't know for sure if this was the case, but Bump, it kind of seems like the criteria for filling in was very simple. They're like looking around. All right, you know, Salk's going to be out. Who are we going to get to fill in? Oh, hey, your name's Mike? Oh, your name's Michael? Yeah, that's like Mike. All right. Hey, you guys want to do it? Sure. So, you know, here
Keep
we are.
Consistent.
Let's have some fun, right? Let's have some fun on a Wednesday morning. I think usually because, well, I don't know about you, but I'm not usually awake and functioning at this time.
No, I'm not. I wake up like around 7:30, honestly, get my kids ready for school. But yeah, this one was rough, man. I got up like at 4:50 to make sure I was, as my coach would say, bright-eyed and bush-tailed and ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are used to it. Maura and Justin are used to it. So,
just going to say, Maura and
not quite.
Any advice on how to survive hour two, three, and, you know, towards
you guys,
hour four?
You guys can treat this one like you're just taking your friend to the airport that one day. This is Maura and I's life.
That's true. In a sense, it's almost fun, right? You're like, oh, this is something new. It's a new experience. All right, I will do this for today. And then you guys will do it every day.
Yeah. So
not to rub that in anymore. Let's focus on some Thanksgiving stuff. Fun things happening today on the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer. Bump, we got Ty France coming up at 6:30. Our guy Paul Moyer at 7:45. Then someone that I think will be really fun for everyone to listen to. You guys will share some Cougs memories. Jerome Harrison at 8:30. That'll be fun. You guys have some fun stories to talk about, or what's gonna happen in that conversation?
Jerome Harrison, the best football player I've ever played with, and a good dude, so it should be fun.
Yeah, you know, so I had to look up, because I didn't really remember much about his pro career. I was like, you know, I remember him. He was on the Browns. He did all this stuff. And then I saw the story about the, 283 yards rushing?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, Jerome Harrison. So that He was an impressive football player. That'll be fun to talk to him.
Yes, sir. Jerome the Ghost is what we call him, the Ghost.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I want to hear all your guys' great Apple Cup memories. We're obviously going to break that down. That's coming up on Friday, so plenty of Apple Cup talk coming up, and we'll have two Cougs on the talk. Certainly that coverage won't be slanted at all, right, as we preview Washington State here on what is traditionally Washington Wednesdays, but it'll turn into a little bit more of a Wazoo Wednesdays here. John Clayton at 8:45, and Matt Hasselbeck, as he does on Wednesdays, the Matt Hasselbeck Show from 9 to 10 o'clock. So it's a great day. It's Thanksgiving Eve. I'm going to stop calling it that because I don't think that's really a thing. It's Wednesday. It's the day before Thanksgiving. We'll have some fun. Hey, Bump and you guys too, Maura and Justin, where does Thanksgiving rank for you? And all the holidays, is it up there? Is it just kind of a thing on the list, or is Thanksgiving one of your favorite holidays?
I mean, as an adult now, you know, I got to lean towards Thanksgiving just because of the food and the leftovers. I like going to my refrigerator and seeing leftovers for a couple of days. As a child, you got to go with Christmas, right? Because you get all these presents and all that stuff. And as a child, Christmas wasn't great for me because my birthday is December 13th.
Oh.
So I'd get those, hey, this is your birthday and Christmas gift. I'm like, no. You got to double up. But yeah, I love Thanksgiving because of the food, and then I get to hang out with family. My grandma, my aunt, and my mom are in town, so yeah, I roll with Thanksgiving. I love it.
Was it tough to have like birthday parties when it was so close to Christmas? Were people like out of town or on vacation or things like that? Because my sister, her birthday is December 24th,
man.
So that's even worse.
Poor baby.
So yeah, she always got doubled up on presents as well.
Doubled up. It was not too tough, man. You know, my circle's always been small, so I got five or six homies, and we go bowling or something simple.
Nice. Crew behind the glass.
I'm with you.
What
Thanksgiving's
are we
looking at? The one. It's the GOAT.
Yeah.
It has to be. I mean, there's it's the only time that my entire family gets together, and when I go to Montana, it's like the high school reunion, so everybody's there. So it's always the best for me.
Any holiday based around eating is A+ in my book.
Eating and football, too. I think
exactly.
Part of the reason why Thanksgiving is so good is because it's kind of like the single best sports weekend. I mean, you have NFL all day tomorrow, three NFL games. You have tons of college basketball. You have those great college football rivalries. Bump, you are part of all these good college football rivalry games. So I think that is kind of grouped in with my Thanksgiving love, and I'll put it up there. I mean, Thanksgiving is one of the best.
I feel it. Sports, food, family. Simple recipe.
Although they didn't give us the greatest slate of games for tomorrow, let's be honest.
They never do, though. You know, it's tough. Like you when
well,
you're stuck
the
with
Lions
the Lions.
Are involved every
yeah,
year.
You're stuck with the Lions there. And then, you know, the Cowboys, you can have hit or miss. And what's funny is because Matt Hasselbeck's going to be on. I was looking up. I was like, oh, did he play in a Thanksgiving game? Yes. Yes, he did. That 2008 game against the Cowboys. And Bump, I know you were part of that team that season. That was kind of a Cowboys blowout.
It was a blowout. I was a part of the team, but I was at home watching. I was on the practice squad when they played, so I didn't experience it firsthand. I was at home eating with the fam, but yeah, that was a rough one.
Were you just kind of like chowing down, like, that would suck. Yeah, they're not doing well. Okay, this turkey's good. All right, let me have another slice of pie.
Yeah, you know, I was a couch coach or whatever you call that. I'm just sitting back critiquing everything. They should have done this, should have done that, but. They were playing. I got a game check. I got a practice squad check that week. So joke's on me.
Nice. I will say, regardless if they're good or not, isn't part of the fun being able to fall asleep while watching them? Just kind of sink into that tryptophan-induced coma while you're watching whatever is on. You know, the Lions losing again, the Cowboys maybe getting blown out or blowing someone out. But you're full. You got plenty of food. And it's just good to be content on the couch.
Yeah, we call that the itis. You get the itis. You get done eating. You get full. You get sleepy. You knock out for about 5 or 10 minutes going in and out. Yeah, I mean, there's a plus. I'd much rather would have been playing, though. Let's not get it twisted.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you were in the fortunate position to kind of be part of that. None of us here talking, the other three of us, will not ever kind of experience that. So for us, that was always great to have the itis and be sitting on the couch. But I feel from where you're coming from in that perspective. So Thanksgiving football, it's going to be fun. The games might not be great. But what's interesting, and Maura brought this up, that Matt Nagy, the Bears head coach, was supposedly told that he's going to be fired. He already was told that, and you know, he denied that. He had a press conference. He came out and said, no, I haven't heard anything. The Bears obviously aren't going to say that, but what timing of this? If a team comes out and really tells their head coach, yeah, you know, tomorrow's your last game. First of all, I mean, do you think they just did that because it's a short week? It would have been too tough to fire a head coach and get an interim guy coaching in a couple of days. But this seems unprecedented that you would tell a head coach, this is your last game regardless.
Yeah, not a good situation over there in Chicago. Somebody let it leak. If this really does, what if nothing comes of this? But let's say that it does, you know, happen. If I'm Nagy, I'm just frustrated. Like, how do you really dive into your work and give it 100% knowing that this is going to be your last game? How do you communicate with your players? You know, how are your players communicating with you? There's a lot of questions in the facility. Who's going to be the next guy up? What's this offense going to look like? You know, who's going to help Fields in his development? There's so many questions. So this is it's pretty sloppy if it goes down. Now, if it doesn't go down and it's, you know, we're just joking, you know, we got caught up, so we're going to switch it up, then good for Nagy. But yeah, it'd be hard to come to work and put your whole heart into something knowing that, this could be your last time there.
Or would you just kind of go YOLO coaching? Like, all right, I'm coaching Madden right now. I would have the most fun. I mean, how would you guys show up if you're like, all right, I'm going to coach one more NFL game, don't have to worry about this team anymore? Would it just be, I'll call whatever play deep. I want.
Just have a turkey leg on the sidelines?
Yes, coach with a turkey leg and just kind of be very chill. Just kind of talk around and say, yeah, you know what? I'm going to call a Hail Mary in this play. I'm going to put my best offensive player on defense and see what happens. Have some fun with it. That would make things more entertaining, right? Would you watch that game, Bump, if it was Matt Nagy really not caring and doing Madden kind of coaching against the Lions?
If I knew he was going to go in with that type of attitude, most definitely. And honestly, why not? You're not going to go out there and run a trick play every single play. But, you know, you might push the ball down the field a bit more. You know, you might run that double reverse you're looking to run, or that screen that never works in practice. But you're like, you know what? I got nothing to lose. Let's do it now. That is an approach. But then you got to think Nagy. He still has to finish strong because he's going to want to coach in this league again, right? If he goes out there and just rolls the dice on every single play and has no interest in what's going on, he's not going to get hired again in this league. So his best bet is to game plan, take it seriously as much as you can, and then get out of there, clean your locker, and go home.
It's the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle. Chime in if you want. We'll be talking plenty of NFL, Seahawks, Thanksgiving games, some Mariners stuff as well. 206-421-3776. But coming up, something that has never been done before on this show. First time ever that you'll hear it on this show. It's coming up next, the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Rolling along here on a Wednesday morning alongside Michael Bumpus. Mike Lefko with you, filling in for Mike Salk today. The Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. We got Ty France coming up at 6:30. Then Paul Moyer at 7:45. Jerome Harrison, one of the best Cougar running backs I've ever seen. I know Bump, he was one of the... You said one of the best you've ever played with as well at 8:30. What was special about him when he was out there?
Man, this guy, one, he's not like a real tall guy. He's like, what, 5'8", 5'9". So he's small. He gets behind the line of scrimmage. That's why we called him the Ghost, because you couldn't see him. And then he would just, man, get out that backfield and run. His senior season, he had 100 yards before halftime every single game. It's crazy.
Wow, that'll certainly help an offense along. So that'll be a fun conversation with Jerome Harrison. Then John Clayton at 8:45 and Matt Hasselbeck from 9 to 10 today on this Wednesday. But right now, let's get to Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know.
Well, I jumped in early. I was too excited.
That's all right.
Up first. Okay, now I know. So up first, we kind of heard about it on Monday.
He's going to get surgery, yes. Okay, Trey Brown. I don't know why that. Yes. Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
So he's done for the year.
I guess. Yeah, if that's what has to take place and it follows through, like this is just the day after, so it looks like surgery is imminent, yeah.
Then we got the confirmation yesterday, jumping in on Pete. I'm just too excited. I said the adrenaline was going to course through me early. Bump, I had to wake up. I had to get going. It might wear off later, but right now we're firing here. But unfortunately, Trey Brown had surgery to repair his patellar tendon and medial and lateral retinal tears. You know it's tough if you barely can pronounce the words, but it's a 6 to 7 month rehab process. How tough of a break is this, Bump, for a guy that really came on strong in his rookie season?
Man, that's unfortunate. Trey Brown looked promising. I loved his technique. I love his football intellect. I love the way he played the game. A couple big plays against the Steelers. Had a play a couple weeks ago. I mean, it's unfortunate, especially with a position group that was struggling to start the season. You felt like they were turning a corner, and Trey Brown was part of that. I feel bad for the young man.
Yeah, he had really stabilized the defense, and they looked fun. That cornerback position really looked fun when he was out there.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
How about some college basketball news? Top-ranked Gonzaga looks like an undefeated team in the making once again. They storm past second-ranked UCLA 83-63. Bump, this really isn't fair. They're building seven-footers like this now. Chet Holmgren, he's a freshman. He's 7 feet, 15 points, 6 rebounds, 4 blocks. He also had a play. He blocked a UCLA guy on one end, took the ball all the way up the court, and dunked on the other end. And this Zags team is loaded again.
It's not even fair, man. Wait till he puts on 10 more pounds. I mean, the kid is still skinny as heck out there getting it done, and made a good UCLA basketball team that beat Villanova for the first time since like 2008 or something earlier this season. Made them look like some JV players out there. It was never close. After about 5 minutes into that game, we knew the Zags were going to pull this one off.
What's funny is he probably weighs a decent amount, right? He's 7 feet tall. You're going to weigh a lot just because your body's that big. But yeah, he looks so thin, and I think a lot of people watching for the first time were surprised to see that, but that guy can ball. And you could see why he was the number one overall recruit in this class. And, man, Gonzaga is loaded again this year. I mean, looks like an undefeated season again. I know that's early. They play Duke on Friday. But, yeah, looking good for the Zags right now.
They got to finish. Come on. Bring home a championship now. Let's get a title.
People didn't like when I brought that up. I was having some fun last night. I tweeted out, yeah, there should be no reason why Gonzaga doesn't go undefeated and lose the national title game again. In jest, of course, but our guy Brent Stecker didn't really like that. So I understand. It was all in good fun, though.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right. I don't know if this is allowed. We're doing it for the first time. Soccer. Talking soccer. Sounders lose in the MLS playoffs after outshooting Real Salt Lake 21-0. No shots on goal for Real Salt Lake. The final score in this strange sport goes down as 0-0. But then in parentheses, you say 6-5 loss. The Sounders lost in penalty kicks. What a weird way to decide a playoff game. You know, kind of changing up the overtime format that a lot of sports do. Soccer, they'll go to penalty kicks. What do you think about that, Bump?
They go to PKs. Everyone has a chance when you go to PKs, I'm sure. Salt Lake was like, yes, we have a chance. No shots on goal. No one pulled the trigger. No one just let one loose from 30 yards out and said, you know what, let's test this goalie. Unfortunate,
right,
man.
Seriously.
I mean, yeah, it's a weird way to win, but that's just the way soccer is. That's why America loves soccer, Lefko, because you get to get no shots on goals and win in a shootout.
Justin, is that true? Is that why America loves soccer?
I stayed up late watching that last night. The thing that blew me away the most is that the Real Salt Lake goalkeeper's 20 years old. To Stefan Fry, who's 35 for the Sounders.
So what was happening? Was he trying to kill time? Because there was some some consternation and frustration on the Twitter timeline about
this. That's certainly a big part of soccer, especially late in the game when your team is down like that, because Real Salt Lake was playing four PKs.
Yeah.
Like, they knew they were outmatched, and they won.
Well, let me ask you guys this, because it's such a strange dynamic, and we'll compare it to every sport here, that hockey does this. So, you know, in soccer, you get the overtime sessions, and if it stays tied, you go to penalty kicks. Hockey does that as well, but in the regular season. So they'll go to a penalty shootout because they want the games to end. Look what baseball did. You know, they had that runner on second thing. That was kind of a quirk, but they did it. But when it comes to the playoffs, when it comes to games that actually matter, they don't fundamentally change the format of the game. Hockey just plays. Overtime session after overtime session, you will play until you collapse out there on the ice. I mean, my Tampa Bay Lightning won in 5 overtimes in a playoff game a couple years ago. NFL, you know, they're not ending it in a tie, right? You're not ending an NFL game in a tie in the playoffs. No, not in the playoffs.
Not in the playoffs, true.
So they change it. So why does soccer do this? Why?
I got a hockey question. First of all, don't you guys do change the game at the end of hockey, right? You go 3-on-3.
No, in the regular season.
Oh, the regular season, but in the playoffs,
it's 5-on-5. It is pure. They don't fundamentally alter.
That's good to know for
me. A game that would chain and decide like a series. So the Sounders season is over because of penalty kicks. In the NHL, if the Kraken are in a playoff series and it's a deciding game 7, you're not going to 3-on-3 and then going to a shootout. They keep it pure. In the NFL, you know, you will play on overtime after overtime if it's a playoff game. So maybe that's my biggest beef with soccer. Penalty kicks. I don't know.
I think the only way you can change it in soccer is if you allow more subs. Because you only allow like 3 subs in a soccer game. So yeah. Those guys are gassed. You're playing an hour and a half out there. Could you imagine playing overtime after overtime? Dudes would be walking out there. Unless you allow guys to sub as many times as you can, I think you kind of have to end it that way.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe we should change soccer. Bump, you and I, we're going to fix soccer. Let's do that. We will fix soccer coming up, in addition to plenty of other things. This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jafco Plumbing. We got a big show on tap. Michael Bumpus and Mike Lefko in here for Mike Salk. We're going to have Paul Moyer at 7:45. We'll see Hawks reunion here, a little Hawks Live reunion for you guys. Yeah. Usually, I don't get to talk on air to you guys. I'm just sitting here. You guys come in, you do your thing on Thursday nights, and you know, and then I wave goodbye. But hey, we'll all get to talk tonight.
Let's do it.
So Paul Moyer at 7:45, Jerome Harrison at 8:30, John Clayton at 8:45, and Matt Hasselbeck for the full hour, 9-10. But coming up, the Mariners didn't make the playoffs, but they might have found their future first baseman. We'll talk to Ty France next in the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
We're excited to talk right now to Ty France, Mariners first baseman, who joins me here on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Good morning, Ty. How are we doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. How's the offseason going for you?
It's been good. It's been busy. I'm getting married this offseason, so finishing up the wedding planning, and then January, getting married. So it's been
congratulations.
Been a busy ride so far.
Big deal. Congratulations. Where are we getting married? Give me some details here.
Thank you. We're getting married in Pacific Palisades in California. Both of our families are from LA area, so central location down by the beach, and I'm definitely looking forward to it.
I like it. Yeah, you're from what, West Covina, right? I kind of thought of you as a San Diego guy, I guess because you went to college down there, but you're from West Covina.
Yeah, I'm more, I grew up in West Covina, and then, like you said, went to college in San Diego.
So you go down to San Diego, you're a 34th round pick of the Padres. How do you get them to notice you as a 34th round pick?
To be honest, once I was drafted, I didn't really look at it like that as just, you know, go out and play my game, and you know, hopefully that speaks for itself. And I have to give them a lot of credit. They treated me like, you know, every other player. If you performed, they promoted you. If you didn't, they, you know, left you at the level you were at. So, you know, give a lot of credit to them. They treated me really well.
And what do they tell you off the bat? Just, hey, you got to hit. If you hit, you're gonna move up.
Honestly, they didn't really tell you much. They kind of just want you to go out and be yourself, and you know, that's what I did.
You start off your minor league career in Tri-Cities, right? Not that far from here, Tri-Cities, Washington. How far did you feel from the big leagues on that first day when you show up there?
Pretty far. You know, you walk into the short season, all of the short season, you know, stadiums were not, you know, very nice. Most college places were nicer than them. But, you know, the fans in Tri-Cities were awesome. Which was really cool. That was the first time I really played in front of fans like that. And so that gave it a sense of like, okay, you know, you're in pro ball now. But yeah, when you start thinking about it, you know, you're what, 5-6 levels away from the big leagues. Seems like it's going to take forever. And then, you know, 4 years later, there you are at Petco Park.
So yeah.
It was crazy.
Was there a moment along the way where you had a thought like, hey, I could do this. Like, I'm good enough. I can make the big leagues.
Yeah, you kind of have to carry that like little bit of swagger confidence with you the whole way. But it started to get more real once you get to like double A, triple A. That's when you're like, all right, you know, I'm knocking on the door here. This could happen.
It's pretty cool. Talking to Ty France, obviously a great year this year for the Mariners. Is there a moment from this past season that you will remember the most?
To be honest, that whole like last week of the season when we played the A's and the Angels, that was a crazy homestand. You know, to be able to see T-Mobile packed with 40,000 plus, and then you know, giving Kyle Seager his send off, that was just pretty special.
It sure seemed like a special group. We talked to Paul Sewald a couple of weeks ago, and just listening to him talk about the way this group came together and the amount of fun that you guys had, it must have been just a different experience for you.
Yeah. You know, coming into the season, I think there was very little pressure on us because, you know, we weren't expected to do much this year. So we kind of just tried to make the best of it. And, you know, it, like you kind of mentioned, it turned into a fun group of guys having a good time out there and, you know, playing their best baseball and, you know, kind of shocked the world a little bit and, you know, had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, talk to me a little bit about J.P. Crawford and his role in that. I mean, he's such an energizing-looking person and just had a couple of experiences watching him this year from the stands and seeing, you know, I was close by one day. I saw him pop up to start an inning, and I heard him go down into the tunnel, and you could hear some of the frustration. And then it ended up being an inning where you guys rallied and saw him, like, immediately pop right back up, first guy out there to congratulate whoever it was that came up with the run-scoring hit just a minute later. That ability to kind of be selfless and think about the team seems so special on a team like what you have this year.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, when I first came over here, I knew JP a little bit, but I always thought he was more like quiet, reserved to himself. And it's almost the exact opposite. He's all about the team. And, you know, he's definitely a spark plug for this group we have. You know, he's our leadoff hitter. You know, we go and he goes. And kind of like you said, to be able to, you know, get upset for a moment and then just flush it and, you know, care about your team. That's what you want to see in a leader. And, you know, it just shows he cares. You know, one, he wants to help as much as he can. That's why he gets frustrated when he doesn't. But to be able to just throw that away and go pull for the boys, you know, he's a special player on and off the field. He's a good dude off the field. And, you know, I'm glad I'm on his side now.
Yeah, no kidding. I've heard you say, I think it was even on this station, I've heard you say that you like just talking to guys over at first base when they show up over there, whether Scott likes you to or not. What are you guys talking? I mean, what is it? Because you don't strike me as necessarily the most talkative guy. It's just a friendliness thing. What is it out there?
Yeah, it usually just starts with a like, hey, what's up, man? And kind of get a read on if they're a talkative person or not. And if they are, you know, you meet a lot of guys in this game. And me personally, I like to hear guys' stories, you know, just where they're from, stuff like that. And you know, you end up making a lot of friends in this game, which is, you know, a unique opportunity. especially being over at first base, you know, guys get to first a lot. So, you get the chance to chop it up with them. And, you know, I like to have fun with it.
How many ball players are coming to this wedding here in a couple of weeks?
It's more of a, family wedding. We didn't do too many, I think we have like five maybe.
Okay. So yeah.
We both have big families. Okay. So it'll be more family.
Who's the funniest guy you've met over there at first base as you're chatting with everybody?
To be honest, Jared Walsh, he's a character. He
loves the Angels.
a lot more than I do. but he's funny.
Okay.
He's a good one. To be honest, I haven't met like one bad dude. You know, there are a handful of guys that, like, you know, they have to take the game really serious and lock in, which I can completely understand. And, you know, I leave those guys alone, but for the most part, everyone likes to, you know, talk.
I mean, you wouldn't tell me if there was a bad guy though, right? I mean, that's like an immediate fight that you've got to deal with next year. If you say that, all of a sudden that's bulletin board material.
I mean, if they were a super, super bad guy, I wouldn't mind airing them out. But I haven't met one person where I'm like, dang, this guy sucks.
Why baseball for you? What got you into baseball above other sports? How'd you choose?
I played baseball, I want to say since I was like 2 years old. Just fell in love with it when I was a kid. Growing up, I was bigger than most kids, so I did fall in love with football. I played football 2 years of high school, and, you know, ended up picking baseball, which I'm very thankful I did. I walked on campus at San Diego State and saw the size of our football players. So I was like, dang, these guys are massive. If these guys are huge, I can only imagine what Clemson or Alabama looks like. So very thankful I chose the baseball route.
What about this upcoming year, 2022, big year for you? What can you hope to accomplish this year? What can you improve on from last year? What are your goals?
Just consistency. You know, trying to basically repeat what I did last year. I felt like I had a really good year last year. And, you know, if I can knock out that 10-day IL window and just play 162 healthy, that's one of my main goals. And, you know, kind of try and be a spark plug for this team.
How about Jerry? Jerry DePoto's got a huge offseason ahead of him here. And, you know, we've read Mitch Haniger's piece and sort of the idea of kind of pushing the team to take that next step, acquire the next couple of pieces. If Jerry comes to you tomorrow and says, hey, any advice? What should I be doing this offseason? What would you tell Jerry?
I'm pretty sure he's got that under control. But, you know, they make it sound like they're going to go out and spend big this off season, which, you know, I think is needed, and, you know, go grab a couple big time players, a couple veteran guys. And, you know, we're going to be in a good spot. You know, we're not really missing too much. You know, our bullpen's phenomenal. You know, majority of our lineup is really good. Our starters. So we just need a couple key pieces and, you know, it should be a good year for us next year.
Is there a personality type maybe that fits specifically on this team? Is there a type of personality he should be out there looking for?
Not really. No. I mean, there's tons of different personalities in that locker room, and, you know, we all mesh pretty well. So, you know, I think whoever they decide to go out and grab will be a good fit.
What if he came to you and said, hey, I could use your help. There's a free agent out there. I think you know him, and maybe you could go talk to him for me and help sell him on what we're building in Seattle. What would be your sales pitch right now on what kind of a team you guys have going?
I think, you know, we last season what we did kind of spoke for itself. You know, we didn't have any, like, you know, wow players, and we won 90 games. So if we can get that wow player, or a player or two, you know, who knows how far we'll be able to go. And, you know, we're an up and coming group. It's a lot of fun over here. We have a good time, and, you know, one to two key pieces could help us.
I love it. Ty, really appreciate it. Congratulations on just a great year. It's a lot of fun watching you guys in general and you specifically. Congratulations on the season. Congratulations on the upcoming wedding. And we'll look forward to spring training.
Sounds good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was Mike Salk and Ty France. But today it's Michael Bumpus and Mike Lefko here on the Mike Salk Show, filling in on a Wednesday. Bump, I don't know if I realized that Ty France was from West Covina. Now is that L.A.? Would you consider that L.A.? I know it's close, but if he's like, I'm from L.A., would you have to call him out on it?
Yeah, I'd have to call him out on it. West Covina, he's about 15, 20 miles outside of downtown L.A., but he's Southern Cali all day, though.
Okay. So you rep him for that, but he can't say, I'm L.A. You guys are Southern California guys, and that's the connection.
I mean, he can say – I mean, some people say L.A. just to make it simple, right? Like, people out here say Seattle. I'm like, nah, man, you live in Woodinville. You don't live in Seattle. You know?
It's, yeah, that's true.
I get why he would say it.
I get that because I will tell people that. Like, I am from, like, a little suburb outside of Indianapolis. But if you say that, no one has any idea. It's just if you get called out on it, then you're like, oh, yeah, not actually from Indianapolis. So, all right. As long as he's not around L.A., guys, it works. So, yeah, Ty France from L.A. But, you know, that was one bright spot in a really, really tough Mariners season on offense, even though they did so well. And now, all of a sudden, we're looking at a Seahawks season, and same thing. There's no offense. So, the Mariners couldn't get the offense going for most of the season. The Seahawks offense is really struggling. But I think that's more surprising. Like, I don't understand why the Seahawks offense is struggling so much. What have you seen from them? Why? Why are they struggling so much this year?
Well, one, you missed your quarterback for, what, 3 games or so. So that's obviously not going to help. Now you're missing Chris Carson for the rest of the season. He's only been available 3 or 4 games. You don't have your guys out there. But I'm watching. I went back and I watched that Arizona game last night again. And I'm seeing Russell's missing a couple guys. He missed an easy throw to DK. You got guys dropping footballs. Disley drops a football. He misses Gerald Everett in the end zone on one of the drives. It just doesn't seem like Russ is in sync right now. Then I'm looking at the play calling. When it's time to take a shot, it's like last year, what they're doing last year, they're sending 2 guys deep and just praying. Like, man, if you're taking a shot, man, you need to get in a 3-by-1 formation, 2-by-2, maybe even empty and occupy defenders. There's no occupying defenders when it's time for them to take a shot. So it just comes down to Russ being a little rusty, guys dropping footballs that they should catch, and then when it's time to take a shot, 2-man combination routes are not going to work in this league.
Yeah, did we maybe underestimate the impact of Russ having an injury and missing time? Because he is, you know, he's Superman. He's Mr. Unlimited. He has been so good for so long, but he's never missed a game. And I think we all assume Russ is back, right? It'll be fine. Everything's going to be good. Everything's going to be brand new. But do you think sitting out for that long and really kind of maybe having to deal with his mortality and sitting there on the sidelines and realizing, I'm not playing. What do I do? Maybe he start to question himself. Do you think that's affected kind of his rhythm? And now back out there, he just seems a little bit more unsure of himself.
Well, there's one thing I'll never question Russell's mentality. I think he's mentally tough. He's going to prepare himself. But the truth is your body isn't prepared. You haven't gone out there and gotten these reps. And then you have to trust that finger. Like, imagine standing in a pocket. You have to throw this football, and there are a bunch of defensive linemen hovering around you, just how you hurt your finger prior. You know, Aaron Donald, you hit your finger on his dang forearm. And
yeah, I don't know how that doesn't happen more.
Yeah,
I mean, it would be in my head certainly all the time.
It's tough. So I think he realized, and we need to realize, the 12s need to realize that he's a human being. He's not a robot. He may answer some questions, and you can kind of predict what he's going to say. But he's a human being, man. So that mental was messed with a little bit. It's more the physical. You got to get in rhythm. You got to throw football with your teammates. And then they got to make plays for you, too, honestly.
What about this, though? What Tyler Lockett said on Monday, and this certainly goes along with your point of saying not in rhythm, but how can this happen where two veterans are not on the same page? Because here's what Tyler Lockett said about the defenses that are playing against the Seahawks.
Honestly, man, like, all these teams is not playing what they play on film. Like, they're literally not. So it's hard to be able to get ready because you don't know what you're going to get. Every time you go against a team, they might place all man-to-man. You know, their whole entire 7-8 games, and then they turn around and play us, and they don't play man once. You know, when you're looking at what teams are doing consistently week in and week out, nobody's doing that against us.
That seems like a pretty revealing comment in and of itself. But then, I mean, both Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson kind of said the opposite. I mean, Russell Wilson said something to the extent, well, here's what he had to say, It wasn't a direct contrast on Tyler Lockett, but it certainly seems different from what Lockett is thinking.
I wouldn't say that. No, I think it's a little different. I think they didn't do anything surprising. To be honest with you, they play, you know, three, they play four, they play six, they play two. Some every once in a while they play a good amount of match man. Typical NFL football. They didn't do anything that was alarming or anything like that. I think that for us, we just didn't execute on making plays.
So are they seeing two different defenses? Or are they just not on the same page on what they're trying to run when a defense is out there?
Russ pretty much said they play everything. They play two, they play three, they play six, they play man. I mean, that's pretty much every coverage out there. And I think they're on different pages because football is situational. So Lockett could be lining up in second and five, and all week during their preparation they're saying, look, on second and five, there's an 80% chance they're going to run this coverage, and this is what you're going to see. Then you line up in second and five, and you don't see that. So I think that's what Lockett is saying. I don't think Lockett's saying, oh, my God, they're playing completely different defenses. I think he's saying in certain situations, I'm expecting to see this, and we're seeing that. And then with Russell Wilson, I mean, he sees it all. He's the quarterback, right? And I think that he has seen every defense, and he's not breaking it down situational. So I think they're on different pages, but they're kind of saying the same things, just articulated differently.
So where does that ultimately go back to? Are the Seahawks not able to adjust from play to play or from down to down? I mean, from drive to drive or maybe even from half to half? Is that more on Shane Waldron still adapting as a first-year play caller? Or kind of like you mentioned with Russell Wilson having missed all these games and trying to get back in that rhythm, maybe things just aren't in sync? Are they not communicating because they are having trouble recognizing what these changes are?
When we talk about adjustments, we're talking about coaches. We're talking about coordinators. We're talking about the head coach. The players don't go to the sideline and say, okay, this is how we're going to make this adjustment. Russell Wilson might. Lockett might have some input. DK might have some input. But end of the day, it's up to Shane Waldron and the coaching staff to say, all right, since they're not doing this on second and five, this is how we are going to adjust. And I think there are adjustments made, but I think that once you get down and you're pressing to score points, you can't adjust. You got to take your shots. And now it's more about just having more shots, having more plays in your playbook that you can rely on when you are down. All these guys got to get on the same page. It starts with the coaching staff. It trickles down to Russell Wilson and to the players. But there's definitely a disconnect out there. If we're listening to guys speaking and they're saying different things, they're not on the same page. The communication is different. A good football team, you can hear a piece of everybody in every interview. Like everyone's going to say something similar to each other because they're all on the same game plan. That's not what we're hearing right now.
Yeah, I'll certainly be interested to get Matt Hasselbeck's thoughts on this, and he'll join us from 9 to 10 here on the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. But it certainly seems like, and I go back to that saying, Bump, you know, everyone has a plan until they get hit in the mouth. You know, you go out there with a plan if you're boxing a guy in a fight, and then all of a sudden you just get hit right in the face, yep. And you have to readjust it. That best laid plan all of a sudden gets thrown out the window. So what I'm curious about, because that offense looks so good in the very first game of the season, and Chris Carson had a great game, and since then he has dealt with injuries, and now he's gone for the year. With all that running back uncertainty, with then losing Russell Wilson for a couple of weeks, do you think Shane Waldron did have that great plan, and now it's been a struggle as a first-year play caller to adjust to all that? Because it seems like the plan in week one was great. It showed it was their best offensive game of the season.
Oh, yeah, you got great ideas week one, week two. But you know what happens? Your ideas get put on film. And everyone's watching that film, and they're game planning for what you like to do. And as a coordinator now, you have to adjust your game plan. You got to make play 2B into play 2C. And you got to have plays off of that play. And that's the challenge of an offensive coordinator. You know, Waldron's been able to be a passing coordinator with the Rams, did a great job over there, but not really asked to make those in-game adjustments and kind of own them. So he's learning, man. I think people have to take that into consideration. If you thought that Shane Waldron was just going to come out here and just change the game, first-time OC, and be remarkable, then, you know, you were wishing upon a star. Sometimes that happens, but a lot of the times, man, there's a learning curve that goes along here. So the second half of this season is going to be huge. The Hawks aren't going to make the playoffs, all right? But how are they going to look as the season ends? I think that falls heavily on Russ being on point and Waldron making these adjustments after weeks of teams kind of figuring them out.
Do you think tensions have kind of escalated a little bit? We heard all the offseason dancing around between Russell Wilson and then, you know, the Seahawks didn't say anything for so long. They finally came out and said, everything's all good. But there certainly was a different feel to this offseason than there was in the past. And the move to Shane Waldron was overwhelmingly supported by Russell Wilson. He came out and said, we're on the same page. Everyone talked about how cool this was, that they had the same concepts and all that. Will this maybe add to the tensions, or is it something where you think that the key players here, Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Shane Waldron, are they locked in step of, all right, we have this season and then maybe more, or is this escalating towards a potential breakup? I don't know which side, but a potential breakup here.
Man, time will tell. I think that right now, if the season were to end right now, I think they're sitting at the table talking about, you know, where are we going from here? What are we going to do? If they can pull off some games, I think that that conversation gets a bit easier to have to kind of persuade everyone to stay. But that's the reality of sports, man. Guys get old. Things change. Philosophies change. People want different things, different goals. So, you know, they go their separate ways. We could be seeing some of that, you know. I wouldn't put it past these guys to kind of patch it up and hold on for another season. But if things get worse, if production goes down, if this offense isn't moving, if Russell isn't producing, if the ballers aren't making plays on offense, they're going to have these conversations. And then you combine what happened during the offseason, there has to be some tension there. No one's walking around VMAC hunky-dory and everything's all good right now. If they are, they need to be in a different profession. That's not happening right now. There is some tension there. How do you fix tension? You win ball games. Can they win these ball games? Man, this is the easiest part of their season. If they don't do it now, then I don't know when they are.
Yeah, this is a fascinating conversation, and I think we're gonna carry this over. We're gonna keep going in on this about the offense, how it could get fixed, and if there is actually a breakup coming down the line, and what might happen in that fallout. Want to get your thoughts as well if you want to weigh in on the situation here, on the tensions between perhaps Pete Carroll, Shane Waldron, and Russell Wilson. Text in on the Mac and Jacks text line 206-421-3776. Another hour coming up in a second in the Mike Salk Show. Serviced by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. If there is a divorce, if a breakup is inevitable, who gets the house, who gets the Seahawks clothing, and who has to buy all new team gear? We'll break it down next. This is the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.